The coalition came about more or less because of a comment Tony Madrigal, the city council person, made about there might have, there's a possibility that there had been some racial profiling at a Halloween party downtown. And he caught hell, and from a lot of people, including myself, because I thought that he needed to say it another way at another time, but it was too late. It was already out then at that point. So I had to apologize to him because I said some things that weren't really cool either. But that's what race does to everybody, you know, including people that have been trained in it, because I've been trained in a by an organization called National Coalition Building Institute, NCBI. And so I've been trained in a lot of anti-bias things, but still race pushes at pretty much everybody's button. So it came about from trying to get information about whether this was actually true, about whether there had been racial profiling downtown that day, and or if it goes on a continuing basis. And from what we can see, yeah, it does go on a continuing basis. So we wanted to get these listening sessions so people could come out and tell their experiences of institutional racism, and that it would give the community something to deal with besides just innuendos, rumors, whatever, that we can have instances, specific instances of institutionalized racism. So that's where it came about from. And Barack Obama's speech didn't hurt any, you know, about race in America. So it's just something that's about time to deal with. I've been trying to deal with this for years. Believe me, I mean, in all kinds of different ways. And I have caught hell because white people in Santa Cruz don't want to hear that they're not all cool and groovy. You know, they don't want to hear that there might be racial problems in Santa Cruz because we're too cool for that.
Yeah,
Santa Cruz.
There's a perception that we're somehow apart from that. We're enlightened. We've gone through trainings. Perhaps not. Perhaps we haven't dealt with it at all. But there's this perception that Santa Cruz is somehow apart, for better and for worse as well, from the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this call for a national dialogue on any number of fronts. Like, I can think of, you know, five just in the past few years that's like, oh, this is big. This is, you know, this is Katrina. This is,
oh,
you know,
yeah, right.
It's Attica. It's Oakland. It's whatever, you know, like we had that same conversation, but you know, every couple of years we have that call to action. And yet the level of the dialogue, both locally and nationally and internationally, seems to stagnate.
Well, it does, because race, I think, is pretty much America's most intractable problem. It's the problem we have never dealt with. It's a problem that I think colors every aspect of American society, especially if you're a person of color. You know, like I tell white people all the time that you can go for days, weeks, maybe even months without thinking about race. I think about race every day because it's put in my face one way or another every day that I'm a black man in America.
So the work of the coalition, there's significant work to be done here. The
yeah,
coalition has taken on a mission.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'd like to see Santa Cruz have this dialogue, you know, because we feel that Santa Cruz, because it is so unique, we may have a chance of, you know, setting standards of dealing with racism, institutional racism. So the coalition, we're trying to get that dialogue started just so that people can understand that it's not our imagination. Like when I went to the Juneteenth Festival and I was handing out flyers to African-American people, and to a person almost, it was like, yeah, well, good, maybe they'll stop thinking that it's our imagination now. Because in the Santa Cruz, you're made to think that it's you. It's not the Santa Cruz. It's you as a black person or a brown person that you're having problems. It's not us. It's you. So the coalition is trying to get this dialogue started so that we can at least get it out and get it so that people know that it's in a reality, not just, you know, our imagination. And the dialogue isn't just to listen to people. It's also, in October, we're going to have a dialogue where we sit down and compile all the information we've had from the four listening sessions. And in October, we'll have a larger event where we, like I said, we synthesize all this information, sit down and figure out what we can do about it. I mean, because there are things that, you know, like institutional racism, like Watsonville dropout rate, something like 60%. It's horrible. And we don't deal with that very easily. Or the fact that we've had one black elected official in this county ever. Mm-hmm. Michael Watkins is mm-hmm. the first black elected official. I thought I was going to be, but I don't care if I was first or not. But Santa Cruz still hasn't. We might have a black president before we have a black city council person. that doesn't speak well for Santa Cruz, I don't think.
Well, now, we keep mentioning this coalition. We're talking about the Coalition for a Countywide Community Dialogue on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice. Who's involved in this coalition?
Oh, boy. Everybody's from, NAACP, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, United Nations Organization, Migra Watch, Brown Berets, the Latino Affairs Committee, Star to Sea Church. So we've got a pretty wide-ranging group of people, I think.
Indeed, indeed.
Amnesty International, Temple Bethel. Yeah, so I think we've got a pretty wide range of people.
Well, before we talk about the July event coming up here, if you would talk about the two that have passed already up in San Lorenzo Valley and then the one on the east side that was more recent in June.
Well, the one... The one in Felton, our very first one, was actually kind of surprising because it was well attended. We had about 75 people there. And while everybody that got up and spoke wasn't a person of color, we did talk because a lot of times race and class tend to bleed into each other. You know, sometimes it's hard to determine just which one is screwing with me the most, you know, whether it's the class or race. But the people at Felton, it was very heartfelt. It was very sweet. You know, we try our best to make sure that people are comfortable when the thing starts. We try to set a tone that, you know, that this isn't an adversarial thing. We're not here to beat up on any police, any institution or person. You know, that we're here as a community to try to be with each other, to try to support each other in this and become allies in each other's liberation instead of adversaries in each other's destruction. So the one in Felton went really well. It was the thing that I think got to me most, and a lot of other people there, is that there was a sheriff representative there and the Scotts Valley Police Department police chief was there. And after people spoke, the police chief got up and talked about how he felt about how he sees discrimination all kinds of ways because his son in school catches grief because his dad's a cop. And kids ask them stupid things like, you know, who'd your dad kill today, or did he arrest anybody, or are these picking on people, or, you know, so this kid is catching hell for what his dad does. So he spoke about that, and he spoke with enough emotion and enough sensitivity that I think it really helped a lot, you know, for people's attitude about police or his own attitude about other people. So it was very well attended, very well received. So the first one, as nervous as we were, because we had no idea what was going to happen, you know. And like I said, a couple people got up that weren't people of color. And one person got talked about what he called economic profiling as opposed to racial profiling, which I thought was pretty cool. I've never heard that term before. But, you know, he talked about that because, like I said, race and class bleeds over a lot of times. So we allowed people that weren't people of color to speak about their instances with institutionalized, racially institutionalized prejudice of any mm-hmm. sort. And the second one was pretty well attended. We didn't have anybody that we wanted to listen because we're trying to get it so that there's talkers, people that are, quote, victims, unquote, when I hate using that word, victims, but people that have been subjected to institutionalized racism. We wanted to have people to listen to them, the people that are on the other side of it, you know, the institutions, whether it's CPS, you know, Child Protection Services, or the police department, or housing authority, or whatever. We want people to hear what the citizens have to say about institutionalized racism. So the second one, like I said, wasn't as well attended by officials, but it was still the same thing. It was heartfelt. It was sometimes it really gets to me in a lot of ways because one of the things that we dealt with was a flyer that one young man came and held a flyer that he had seen posted on a bulletin board, on a telephone pole. And the flyer was about, it says immigration in small letters, and in big letters it says immigration, or in big letters, invasion. And it talks about how Mexicans are coming across the border and they're taking our jobs and they're doing welfare, you know, all the crap, you know, all the stereotypical bullshit they say about people.
The Nationalist Alliance posted those.
Exactly, Nationalist Alliance, which is kind of almost, you're old enough to remember the National Front, because the National Front in Europe is the same thing as the Ku Klux Klan here. Yeah. So this National Alliance, I think, is along the same lines. Matter of fact, there was just a couple people who got caught trying to recruit Ku Klux Klan members in Santa Cruz a few days ago.
Goodness.
Yeah, well, it happened a lot. But I used to have a youth program, and I went to all the high schools and created black student unions. And in Soquel, there were several times that people were trying to recruit people to be in the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, if we could take that tangent for one second and run with it, like, give me the information on that? What's happened in the last few days here?
Oh, I don't have enough information to go any more than that, because I'm trying to find out myself.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure, but it's...
Well, please do let us know.
Oh, I will. Yeah, I just heard it on the news, and I haven't checked it out so much.
Okay.
But it's Santa Cruz, when I first moved here, was known to a lot of people as far as Klan activity.
Yeah.
You know, there were policemen that were in the Ku Klux Klan when I moved here. So, we know the institutionalized racism, it didn't go anywhere. It may have changed forms, and it may have lessened just a bit, but we don't think it really went anywhere. So this coalition is trying to get that information together, and then in October, we're going to sit down, like I said, and try to figure out some solutions. But, because right now, the solutions, I'm not sure what to like as far as no people of color or no black person being elected to city council. I think it would help if we have publicly financed elections. So that's one solution to one problem. So, and that's what our goal is to try to come up with solutions to these individual problems, to come up with solutions for the collective problems, you know, to have this dialogue in the community, because we want this community to have that dialogue. We have to talk about this, because there's no resolution without confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot can resolve anything if you don't talk about it or deal with it.
Well, and thus far, it sounds what you said about the listening sessions, they aren't set up to be confrontational.
No,
you're gathering information. You described them as comfortable and sweet.
Yes.
There's
energy there. I mean, because we were all there for each other, and that's something I think that we don't know enough about in this culture, in this city, whatever, of how to stand up for each other, how to be there psychically and emotionally for each other, so that we feel safe in saying the things that we need to say. Because that's another aspect of it, is that you can come and testify anonymously if you wish. In other words, you don't have to be there, or we can hide you, or because we're taping a lot of these. So we're asking people that don't want to be taped to speak at the end so that we can edit it a little better. But so we're trying to get as many people as we can to testify, because we're still trying to get listeners too, because like I said, some of the people didn't respond very well. So I've written a letter that's going to the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Sheriff's Department and, like I said, Child Protection Services, all the institutes, and the Chamber of Commerce, people that hire people, and schools, just the whole gamut of institutions that we want to be able to have this dialogue, because it's necessary. I mean, this is, what, 2008, and we're still dealing with race in America?
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me, but it's because in Santa Cruz, people have been dealing with saving spotted owls and saving whales and saving trees, but saving black people or brown people, that's not such a big deal here. And like I tell people all the time, black people and brown people were in trouble way before whales and spotted owls or any of these other things that people wanted to, We were in trouble for the last 400 years. None of these species were endangered, in trouble, none of that stuff.
But the practices have been there. We hunted sea otters just about to extinction.
Yeah. Well, see, there's a disconnect, too, between people of color and white people. Because that disconnect in particular, that disconnect of we're going to save the world, but not you Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it sounds like to us.
Well,
we're going to save the world, but not you darkies. That we're not going to do that, because that would cause us to actually restructure this whole culture.
Exactly.
If we dealt with racism on a realistic level, it would cause so much upheaval
in the quote unquote mainstream society is and in the structures and institutions that we're talking about combating institutionalized racism, as well as in the structures that are actively involved in fighting it. There's this kind of mythology, and we alluded to it earlier, like that Santa Cruz is somehow different or apart, and this doesn't exist here. And there's this mythology that's the case, that somehow, you know, that's not an issue, hasn't been dealt with, but it is a mythology. You mentioned, you know, incidents of white supremacist activity in this town, and this town being known for that.
Yeah.
So folks knowing that local history, this seems to be a process of making sure that's current, that history continues to be gathered and documented and opened up to folks.
And a lot of people, I don't think, understand, God, it just went out of my head. I hate it when that happens, my brain kind of shuts down temporarily. But, yeah, in the larger society, we don't deal with it because, like I said, it would cause a lot of social upheaval. This culture was invented, made, whatever, and for white people to be on top. I mean, that's the way it was created. So we still have institutions that are still favoring people, and it's favoring white people and discriminating against people of color because that's the way the whole culture is set up.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't like to deal with that because in order to deal with that, we would have to restructure a lot of things. We would have to talk to our... I mean, institutionalized racism is institutionalized, but if you're in those institutions, you ought to be able to see it. You know, I think that most people that are in institutions do see it from time to time, but it's almost like air. You know, it's there. We have contact with it, but you can't see it. You can't necessarily feel it.
Well, it's this abstract idea that folks can also, in a privileged position, being a part of that institution, choose to combat or no, choose to let go or choose to recognize as such and do nothing more than that, just simply recognize it as institutionalized racism and go on with their daily business. So in terms of the solutions and concrete steps, you know, what? But beyond the listening sessions and beyond the comfortable and the sweet, what is the vision of the coalition longer term and beyond this? You mentioned an event in October where the listening turns into more of a dialogue and more of a solution-based...
Yeah. Yeah, and that's our goal. You know, we have to do the research first before we can do the end part. But the end result, we want to, just like I said, have a dialogue to redo institutions to set them up so that they aren't discriminatory, set them up so that if they are discriminatory, we have checks and balances. You know, like one of the things, you know, we have a lot of problems with police and dealing with people of color. But having a police review board just makes people totally freaking out. I don't know what the problem is, but it does. It freaks people out to think about having control over our police. And it's like I tell people all the time, they're our police. We're not their people. You know, but we don't seem to understand that we do have some power in this culture because it's been disseminated. It's been, you know, like I said, they disconnect with people of color and white people back in the 60s. You know, white people went on talking about, you know, peace and love, and black people were on talking about black power. So there was a disconnect way back then, besides the disconnect that happened in 1619 when they brought the first slaves here. But, you know, there is that disconnect that we have to figure out how to talk to each other on a level which is not, like I said, not blaming, not shaming, you know, because that gets old after a while. And it allows white people to say, I can't hear you because you're blaming, or I can't hear you because you're angry, or I mean, I've heard so many excuses about why we're not being heard, instead of saying, okay, well, how can I hear you? It's more like, well, I can't hear you. And that doesn't work very well. These are people of color because it feels like we're being not only ignored, but neglected more than ignored, you know?
Along those same lines, if you could respond to the idea that is often in that same popular mythology that somehow racism has gotten better, that we're making progress, that somehow, you know, it's different, it's still there, but it's better somehow. The whole idea that it can be better and still exist.
Well, you know, I as much as I sometimes don't want to admit it, things are a little better. I mean, you know, but then again. This is California, where, you know, people smell like I tell you all the time. I was born and raised in Indiana. And in Indiana, they'll tell you straight up, nigger, I don't like you. But in California, they smile in your face, then pat you on the back, and then they don't hire you. Then they don't give you housing. Then, you know, you can't get housing, can't get services.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that whole we can do this. But still, the deeper problem, I think, is not it's just institutional racism. It's racism in our culture. Because if we have the cultural racism, of course we're going to have institutional racism. And it's really hard to stop the institutional racism if we don't deal with the personal racism. So, you know, like, it's easy to talk about, like I said, spotted owls and cow, you know, whatever they're trying to save this year. But trying to talk to your uncle at Thanksgiving about why he just used the word nigger is a lot harder than trying to go out in the street to demonstrate something. You know what I'm saying? When it's in your family, then it's a lot harder to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go tell Uncle Bud, hey, I don't like you using that word, because then you, Uncle Bud, and the whole family is going to get into an argument.
Mm-hmm.
So the institutional racism goes by the wayside because the personal racism goes by the wayside. And I think, you know, like I said, it's really easy to talk about something that's outside of yourself, outside of your family. But, you know, I believe, like, revolution, just like charity, starts at home.
So you mentioned the questions of access and the whole process of how to get folks who want to testify anonymously.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you about, you know, because, I mean, the cops being there, it sounds like so far the interaction with the cops has been positive.
Yeah.
But that's a so far.
So far.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So for folks who, I mean, the next one in July is at City Council Chambers. It's testifying before the City Council. So, you know, in addition to the what may or may not be perceived as...
Well, no, we're not
as,
sure the City Council is going to be
no?
there.
Oh, okay.
No, that's one of the things we're trying to check out now, just who in the City Council wants to be involved in this, because so mm-hmm. far we don't have anybody but Tony.
Okay.
And I would have expected the City Council members to just jump on this, as an opportunity to
likewise.
Undo some nasty things, but it's not there. And I'm not sure if it's because we haven't done enough outreach or if they're just totally ignoring us. Well, like, I'm writing letters now individually. Like, I have a letter to the Santa Cruz Police Department. I have a letter to Canfield, the boardwalk. So I'm addressing these letters now to people instead of institutions, because institutions can ignore us. But if I mail this to Zach Friend, he shouldn't ignore me.
I agree, but, you know, Canfield might open it if it's like as if you sent it from the Republican National Convention. Maybe then he'll open his mail.
Well, they have people that deal with public relations. Almost every institution, everything has a division that deals with some kind of public input or public relations mm-hmm. or something. So that's where I'm aiming it at, you know, trying to get them to send a representative. And like I said in the letter, and like I've been saying, this is not to create adversaries. This is we're trying to create an alliance of people in this county so that we all feel that we are part of this alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Not to, you know, no one's left out, no one's, you know, guilt-tripped or blamed and stuff. We just want this to come together as a community and have a countywide community dialogue on race, poverty, justice, and equality. And we just picked race first because that's what came up. But mm-hmm. we're definitely going to deal with the rest of them, too. And like I said, things will bleed into each other. You know, race and class bleed into each other a lot. But what we want to do now is trying to get people of color to not be afraid to come and talk. So we are offering anonymity so that you can do it, you know. And we're offering doing it by proxy. So that if you have a problem with police or whoever, CPS, that you can write it down and one of us will bring it to the coalition and read it for you so that you don't even have to be there. So if you're afraid of retribution, you know, or just being afraid for any number of reasons, we want to keep you as safe as possible because we want to hear from you. So we will keep you safe no matter what we have to do, whether we, you know, like I said, cover your face with a plastic bag, well, I mean, a paper sack, whatever we have to do for you to be comfortable to come and testify. So we need help from, this is where we need the help from anybody, you know, not just European Americans, you know, white people. We need help from everybody in getting this out and getting people to understand that this is a community effort, that we want everybody involved. So if you as a person that's in the news media, and if you know other people in the media, that we want to get people of color to feel as comfortable as possible because it's even though they were kind of enthusiastic about it when I talked to black people, there's this big reservation about why in the hell would I go tell these people what they're doing to me? They already know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of white people don't know. They don't know how bad it is for a person of color in this town. They may have an inkling, but it's not dealt with. It's not something that's in the newspaper. It's not something mm-hmm. that's, you know, up front anytime. So they can kind of ignore the kind of guess that, oh, this isn't really as bad as it, you know, people say it is. You know, cause, learning how to speak so that European Americans can hear you is quite a task. It takes a lot of skill and a lot of patience, because white people in a second will just shut you off. Just, you know, you're too loud, you're too angry, you're too this, you're too that, you know, instead of just
listening. And refuse to listen.
Yeah. And instead of hearing what's being said, they're listening to how it's being said. And as an African-American in particular, there's a certain amount of schizophrenia involved in living in America. Because as an African-American, I have to remember history. And I know historically, white people have done absolutely nothing for black people, positive anyway. And as a person, I have to look at you as a white person, as an individual. I can't hold everything white people did against black people against you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really hard to back up on that, you know, to realize that as individuals, we are individuals. We are not a collective racist society. But we are a collective racist society, you know. This is a white male supremacist society culture. And in order to deal with that, we have to talk about it. But the mainstream, which is run by white male supremacists, isn't going to talk about it because it doesn't suit them. It doesn't serve their purposes to talk about racism.
So in terms of access, then, the you mentioned that, you know, the people will go out of their way to make sure that folks can do this anonymously or however is necessary. How what's the process for that? Like, for folks who are listening who want to testify or want to write something down, what do they need to do?
They can email me or call me. My email is skenyatta, skenyatta, at cruzio, cruzio, at skenyatta at cruzio.com. Or you can call me at 459-9349. And, or you can call Wanda Knight. Her number is 246-0228. She doesn't have an email, but it's 246-0228 for Wanda, and 459-9349 for Dr. Simba. And yes, and we could use your help. Like I said, you're in media, so we can definitely use your help in getting people of color there.
Well, and certainly with outreach, you mentioned, you know, how people in general can support, and you also mentioned specifically how European Americans, how white folks can help turn people out, you know, and help make people more comfortable. But that's part of what's most difficult about this. White people don't know how to make people of color comfortable and help them come to this.
No, that's so obvious when you look at organizations, everything from PETA to Amnesty International. There are very few people of color in these organizations
mm-hmm.
because there's been pretty much no outreach.
Yeah, we know this. We know that this is part of the problem. So,
what
do you think white folks can do to help support
these
hearings?
Hearing you say, what do you think white folks can do? Because, see, that's one of my problems, that I'm tired of telling white people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Think of shit on your own. You know, you thought of slavery on your own. Shit, you can think of something else on your own to undo this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, it's not on people of color to do our part and your part.
Mm-hmm.
We do our part, it's on you to do your part. It's just like, you know, men and domestic violence. Women can't stop domestic violence. They're not the ones perpetrating it.
Mm-hmm.
Men have to stop domestic violence. Black people and people of color don't start racism. So it's not on us to stop it. It's on us to collectively stop it, to do it as an alliance and stop it. But there's no way that people of color can stop racism. It's on white people. You know, it's like I said, it's your trip. It's not ours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would love to see white people get together and have a fervor, have a willingness to do this without having to be dragged. You know, that would be a nice thing, just to see this community go, all right, we have something now, we can deal with this. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It would be nice to have that attitude, but As a person of color, I really don't expect that to happen anytime soon or anytime at all, which, like, it's depressing. It's depressing, to tell you the truth, because you don't know what to do next, we don't know where to go next, and we don't know how to create alliances with people that won't come to be in the alliance.
Mm-hmm.
You and an organization I just heard of called the John Brown Committee,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've written us and asked what we can do, what they can do to help. Everything from child care to distribution of literature to, I mean, they really warmed my heart, because they just, anything we can do at all to help this go on, we will do it. So just let us know whatever we can do. And that, like I said, just warmed my heart. It's like, cool, cool. Somebody came on their own, you know, without having to be asked, you know, without having to be drugged, that they came on their own because they want something else to happen. That is just makes you feel wonderful. It has a long-term effect, because we know we're not in this by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there can be alliances and that we can do these things, you know, without having a lot of... I tell people all the time, things that are deep don't have to be heavy. You know, we can carry this load with each other. It makes it a lot lighter if we all carry this load, because, like I said, people of color carrying this load by ourselves isn't going to work, because we didn't start this crap, so we can't end it.
Well, you mentioned child care. Is that in process for the
yes, evening? Yes, I'm going to talk to them tomorrow, this John Brown Committee. I'm going to talk to them tomorrow about what they can do, because we haven't had child care. We haven't had any kids. We haven't had that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that this Santa Cruz one, it may be a little different, because we're trying our best to get Latinos and people of color, and we know that, you know, that people are working. You know, they're trying to survive, so... Yeah, but having and then trying to find child care and pay for child care on top. No, we don't want that. So, yes, we'll try to provide child care. We'll try to provide anything we can. You know, we have snacks and stuff there, you know. So we'll try to provide whatever we can just so we can make this as ongoing and as well-received as possible.
So before we go further, this is Wednesday, July 30th at 7 to 9 p.m. at the Santa Cruz City Council Chambers. Right downtown, and what is the hearing going to look like for those 2 hours? Is it an open mic? Can folks just come right in and say their piece?
Yeah, it's an open mic. You don't have to sign up or anything. There will be facilitators. I'm usually one of the facilitators that, you know, helps call on people and mm-hmm. keep things running smoothly and stuff. So there are people that, you know, that will control the situation, that it's not just people just running off and saying whatever the hell they want and then running back. You know, we want people to introduce themselves, let people know, you know, where they're from, what their situation was, you know, just to be able to feel comfortable about telling what happened. And like I said, that's one thing that we're trying to do, with particularly with law enforcement, because that seems to be the, you know, the more testimony we get, the more we hear that it seems to be more law enforcement than any other agency, which, you know, it's not a big surprise,
no.
But, you know, it's trying to get people to understand that they have a stake in this, I think, is the bigger question and the bigger problem. Because a lot of people of color, a lot of people don't feel they have a stake in what's going on anymore. And, you know, Obama being a candidate, you know, it helps him, but it also hurts in a way, because it makes people think, oh, we're through now.
Yep.
We're through with racism. Well, we got a black candidate for president, you know. Well, who knows what that man's going to do? I mean, who knows if he's going to make it to November? I mean, because that's one of my fears, that somebody is going to blow him away, because that is what they do to black people. And not just black people, they do that to anybody that stands up for their rights. Hell, they shot Mahatma Gandhi.
Mm.
I mean, that guy didn't do nothing to nobody, you know. He didn't do anything to anybody, and they shot him. You know, King, Kennedy, it doesn't make a difference. So, yes, as an African-American, I am scared to death. That man's not even going to make it till November.
Well, and like Elaine Brown said, that it Obama makes issues of race and racism invisible because of exactly what you said. That, oh, not well, if we elect a black man, then everything's cool. Like... It's okay now, or you know, this unwillingness to actually have the national dialogue or legitimate local or interpersonal or family dialogue.
Maybe if Barack Obama gets elected, maybe he can start that national dialogue, you know, because it needs to be had. We have to have this national dialogue, like South Africa, you know, they have that, excuse me, Commission on Truth and Reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have basically the same thing that we're doing. People come and testify about what went on with them during apartheid, how it affected them, you know, and white people that perpetrated the stuff coming up saying, I am so sorry that I ever did that, you know, and people have a sense of togetherness, a sense of alliance, you know, that we're not adversaries and we're not here to beat up on you or any of that stuff. You know, that's what the letter I sent to the Vernal Police Department, saying specifically, we're not here to beat up on you. We're not here to make blame or induce shame. We don't want to do any of that. We want you as allies in this culture. We want you as allies in this community. And that's really hard to do with law enforcement because law enforcement consciously keeps itself separate from everybody else because they have to be controllers. And it's hard to be a controller if you're noticing or thinking of yourself as common with everybody else. If you're thinking of yourself on the same level and the same thing, then it's kind of hard to play the controller game as much as they might like to. So
it's hard to oppose white power from a position of power.
and a
position of benefiting from it, and in fact acting it, using it every day.
Yeah, well, like I said, we don't look very carefully at ourselves and our culture because it would cause a lot of upheaval. So we keep it the down low. We keep it as down as we possibly can so that we don't have to go through those problems. But as human beings, I always think, you know, this evolution is revolution, you know, that we are evolving past the point where we do the things that we used to do. That's what I would like to think. The reality is very much different, but I would like to think that we are evolving, that we're not where we used to be. But there are still people that, if they could, would have slaves. They still exist, you know. We like to think that we got way past all that, but there are a lot of people that if they could, they would own slaves. Seriously, there are people that don't care about whether they're stepping on somebody else or not. And like I said, and in that, the white community has to talk to the white community. Mm-hmm. You guys got to talk to each other about what the hell are we doing to these people, and why are we continuing to do it? And until that dialogue goes on in the white community, the people of color can talk about any number of things as much as we want. Nothing's going to happen. So we really need, which I really appreciate you having this dialogue with me right now, because hopefully whoever's listening will understand that we have to have these dialogues, that the dialogue isn't going to hurt you. Just because you listen to somebody doesn't mean you necessarily agree with them. Just, you know, if you're just willing to listen. So that's what we want. We just want people to be willing to listen. Open up your heart, open up your mind, and realize that we're not doing these things to try to be mean to white people. I mean, that's a losing proposition from the beginning. So there's not a lot we can do to white people. That's not what our objective is. We really do want the community to come together and talk about this problem and deal with it and come up with some concrete solutions and not just talk about it and talk about it and talk about it and talk mm-hmm. about it, because we do that in America real well, too. We'll talk something to death. Doing something about an entirely different story, but we'll talk about something, you know, but this isn't one of the things we talk about.
Well, the doing sounds like that upheaval you keep mentioning, and it's like the talking and the talking. This upheaval is, you're saying that it's a positive thing, and community wide, the goal is to grow and to have a positive, different future where more people feel empowered and feel like they have a stake in society, right?
Yep.
Building a better world.
Yep.
Right.
But other it's realistic, you know, it's mm-hmm. things that we've been taught so long that thinking of things like having us come together in peace and unity are pipe dreams. They're just something that, you know, pie in the sky type things. But I feel it's quite the opposite, that it's pie in the sky to think we can keep on going like we're going.
Well, so the question is that white folks fear it. They fear that upheaval, that reordering of society, that they'll...
Yeah, because they might not be on top.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows, I mean, and a lot of white people that don't think that they're not, or white supremacists are, they really don't think so until they get confronted with a black boss, or, you know, somebody, that a black person or a person of color telling them what to do,
mm-hmm.
and they start steaming, and they don't even know why they're getting pissed off.
Yeah, why does this person have power over me? I'm a white man. I'm a straight white man. No one has power over me.
Yeah, well, when I ran for city council last time, I tried to say it in ways that people could hear without getting freaked out. But because Obama has the same problem. He's a black person that can't talk about race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did once in that speech, but he can't talk about race, just like me running for city council. I can't talk about race because people will think that I'm trying to guilt trip them into voting for me. I don't want to guilt trip you. I want you to look at me as a candidate because I'm running again. You know, I'm going to say my papers out Monday. So I'm running again, and I want people to see me as just a legitimate candidate, not as a black candidate, not as a, you know, but as a person that has Santa Cruz's interest at heart. And I think that sometimes gets lost in the politics, because we do politics so much in everywhere in this county and in the country. We do politics instead of solutions and confrontation. So this time, in my running for city council, I may bring up race because it's damn impossible not to. You know, like I said, there's been
Absolutely.
One black elected official in the history of this county. That's not good. I don't care how you look at it. That's not good.
Well, so Santa Cruz has a lot of work to do, and again, I want to mention this hearing coming up in July. This is the 30th, Wednesday, July 30th, from 7 to 9.
And if you want anyone to testify, or if you would like to testify, you can call ahead of time or just show up at the event. But if you'd like some protection, you know, anonymity, however you want to do it, give me a call. My name is Simba, and my number is 459-9349.
And then,
again, it's 459-9349.
And that includes writing out your comments. Is there access to translation?
Yes, we have an interpreter there too. There's a woman named Anna, her last name, but she does interpreting from a company called Mondial Interpreting, and she does interpreting and translating, and she's been doing that for us for free. So I just want to give her a shout-out and tell her thank you
Absolutely.
For doing that.
That's hard work.
And this new committee, this John Brown committee that wants to do the child care or whatever they want to do, I'm welcoming them to. And anyone else that wants to join the coalition, give me a call.
Right on. And then for folks that can't make the night of the event, I, for instance, will be working right at that time. Is there access at other times of the day?
Give me a call and we'll work something out. We'll figure out a way to do it. And there's another one in August the 20th in Watsonville.
August 20th?
August 20th at the First Presbyterian Church in Watsonville.
First
so maybe we'll talk about that before that happens.
That for sure. But that's new information. I have the to be announced flyer, so.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, it's August the 20th from 6:30 to 9:30.
6:30 to 9:30. Excellent.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, Simba, thank you very much for your time and for your work and for spending close to an hour with me on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
And we'll do our best to turn out folks for this event and continue this dialogue.
Yeah, any of you white people out there that have people of color for friends, which not a lot do, but if you do...
Some of my friends are black.
Say what?
I said some of my friends are black.
Some of your friends... Congratulations.
I apologize for that bad joke.
It was funny to me. I got to tell people, you know, things that are deep don't have to be heavy. You know, we had a meeting last week. We were talking about how much money we had in our little treasury. And I told them, well, I tried to turn a few tricks, but it didn't work very well. And they laughed. It was funny, you know. So we're trying to not just be heavy, you know. This has to have some kind of levity, some kind of, you know, about it. So
we got to work together. We got to play together. We got to build together.
Yeah, like Emma Goldman said, if I can't dance, I don't want no parts of your revolution.
There you go.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, Simba.
All right. So.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.